This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, we've got to the end of the week here. Thanks for joining us. Happy Friday to you. It is Wake Up Call SportsMap Radio. We've been talking all week about this game Sunday night as Tom Brady returns to Foxborough to take on the Patriots. And, you know, most of the conversation that we've had and most of the media is having is more on the larger scale, right? Brady going back to Foxborough, 20 years, how will the fans react? They're going to cheer him. How is the team going to honor him? All of those things. How was the breakup? How do both guys feel about it, etc.? But let's not forget the game. Yes, the Bill Belichick's Patriots have a rookie quarterback. And yes, Tom Brady is coming off a Super Bowl championship. And he's got a team that's coming off a loss to the Rams, but is still capable of making a championship run. But as much as we talk about all of the outside stuff to this game, let's not forget that there is a quarterback on one side that has seen Bill Belichick's defenses for 20 years in practice. And we've got a head coach and a defensive brilliant mind on the other side that has watched his quarterback go through every single thing a quarterback can go through in an NFL career. Yes, a lot of these pomp and circumstance that is going to go around this game is kind of interesting, right? We don't see these kind of things very often in sports. And we haven't seen this kind of circumstance at all, where a quarterback wins six Super Bowls with one team over a 20-season career, goes to somewhere else, and wins another Super Bowl the second he gets there. We haven't seen that. But let's not forget, this could be a really brilliant game of defensive mind against offensive brilliance in Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Now, do I think the Buccaneers win the game? Yes. But I do want to see how Bill Belichick draws up a defense that may look brand new to Brady, because that's what Bill Belichick has to do. Brady has seen everything. He's brilliant at reading what you're bringing. And Belichick may have to have spent a lot of time devising things and disguising stuff to shut Brady down, if he can even do that. And on the flip side of it, Brady has to figure out all of that defense while he's trying to play at a high level, because the Buccaneers need him to play at a high level, because to go 2-2 to start the season whilst you can overcome it, you want to keep the momentum of being a Super Bowl champion alive.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call. Happy Friday to you. All right, so last night the Cincinnati Bengals beat Jacksonville. And you know what? We were kind of making fun of this game, or at least I was all week. Like, all right, listen, it's not going to be the greatest game. This actually was a pretty good game. I mean, for what it was a pretty good game. Jacksonville falls to 0-4. They had a 14-0 lead in this game. And at one point could have gone up 21-0. Trevor Lawrence got stopped on a 4th-and-1 play at the goal line. But they still took a 14-0 lead at halftime. Cincinnati came back, scored 2 touchdowns to tie the game in the third quarter. And then James Robinson scored his 2nd touchdown of the game. And that gave Jacksonville a 7-point lead. But Cincinnati would tie it. Then they would go down the field again. They would kick the game-winning field goal with no time left. And the Bengals win. Now, Urban Meyer was clearly frustrated afterwards. He really frustrated. And rightfully so. Because there were a couple of things that went in his favor in this game. One, he had a 14-point lead at halftime. Now, that's not the telltale sign that you should win a football game. NFL teams come back from 2-touchdown deficits all the time. But still, if you're Jacksonville and you have a 2-touchdown lead and it could have been a 3-touchdown lead, you're doing some things correctly, right? At this point, you're doing things correctly that you've got to keep up in the second half. And Trevor Lawrence played a really good game. Trevor Lawrence was 17 of 24, a little over 200 yards. But more importantly, he didn't throw any interceptions. And even more importantly than that, Jacksonville didn't have any turnovers. So you can only imagine how frustrated it must have been for Urban Meyer to have an NFL team, a team of NFL talented players. All right. So let me remind people, Jacksonville may be bad, but their players are good. Still the top players in the world. This is not an expansion team with cast-offs where, you know, they don't belong in this league, but maybe down the road they can get better players. They have very good players on this team. And when you're up two touchdowns and you're not turning the ball over, you should find a way to win the game. You need to win the game. And Jacksonville didn't. This is not like getting blown out. This is not like where you're clearly not capable of beating one of the elite teams in the NFL. This was a game in which you went in, played well enough to have a lead, played well enough to get the lead again in the fourth quarter, but then lose on a last-second field goal, and you didn't turn the ball over. And your rookie quarterback played decently. Right? Those are things that should lead to victories, regardless of whether or not you're starting a rookie quarterback. And that's the thing that's got to be really aggravating to him. Rookie quarterbacks are going to lose football games. We know that. That's just the way it is. They're going to lose your football games. When you start a rookie, you're not going 14-2 or 14-3 now. Right? You are going to go win, get, if you get to 500, great. If you get a little bit more than 500, fine. But most of the time, you're going to have a losing season. You can take that if you're developing a guy into an NFL superstar. But what you cannot do is have a game like that where your rookie quarterback plays well enough, the team does the things that are right, doesn't make mistakes, and you still find a way to give up 24 points in the second half and lose on a last-second field goal. That you can't do. I will concede that there are games this season that Jacksonville will lose because they should lose. They were not capable of winning, even though the margin is small between teams in the NFL. But given a rookie head coach, given a rookie quarterback, I'm not going to sweat Jacksonville losing games. But I would if I was a fan on this one. If I was a Jacksonville fan, this would make me angry. All of those elements should have led to Jacksonville winning this football game last night. And kudos to Joe Burrow and the Bengals, and more importantly, Zach Taylor, who we never talk about, because this team did not panic in the second half. Maybe because they were expecting at any moment Trevor Lawrence to throw a pick or two. Maybe when they were in the locker room, they saw enough decent things for what they were doing despite a two-touchdown deficit and being shut out in the first half. But nevertheless, the Bengals came back. They didn't panic. They tied the game, and then they tied the game again when Jacksonville went up in the fourth quarter. Was this a great, oh my God, if you missed it, you missed a classic? No. But was it decent enough? Was it a better played game than I thought it was going to be? Yeah, it was. It was on Jacksonville's side. And Meyer, in this post-game press conference afterwards, clearly frustrated. And I've been saying this for, I don't know, 4 weeks now, four games now. He is analyzed a lot differently than any other rookie coach. We do not look at Robert Saleh, for example, or Dan Campbell, guys who are getting their first starts of being a head coach, Nick Sirianni. Who's the coach? Brandon Staley of the Chargers.
Yep.
We don't look at them and go, are they frustrated? Are they angry? Are they regretting their decision? Like, we aren't looking at those guys because those are NFL guys. Those are guys who are going to be head coaches, and if they're not, they'll just stay coordinators until the turn runs again, and maybe they can land as a head coach again. But Urban Meyer making his bones in college football, and not only doing that, but being one of the most successful college coaches in the history of the game, the decision to come to the NFL comes with scrutiny, and it's going to come with an extra magnifying glass on what you're doing, and that is why articles are written on his demeanor at the end of games. We're seeing articles about that with the Jets or the Lions, right? We're not seeing those because those guys, again, are going through some growing pains with some very bad teams. But as NFL guys, that's kind of what's expected. A college coach with national championships on his resume going to the NFL. Now we're wondering if he made the right decision or not. That's one of the reasons you're getting that sort of extra info on Urban Meyer. And Meyer was like, look, we're going to win some games. And he's probably right. They are going to win some games. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, if he's found something in his play in this game that kind of minimizes a few of those interceptions, maybe allows him to take deeper throws and more chances and more confidence, then this is a turning point. You know, where for him, maybe not for the team, because I think he'll still lose games even if he plays well. But you might look back on this season and see just an increase in confidence and a standard in play that rises that gives you an excitement. I remember Drew Bledsoe's rookie season in 1993. It was one of my first years in radio out of college. And Bledsoe and the Patriots, you know, Bledsoe was making these, was under Bill Parcells, he was making mistakes. And, you know, like, you know, I remember telling you guys that one game he went in for a goal line quarterback sneak, but he tucked the ball too far down, so the ball never crossed the plane, but his helmet did. And you go, okay, you watch that on film. You're a rookie quarterback. You'll know better next time you do that to make sure the ball is out in front. Those kind of things, you know, like he's growing. But towards the end of the season, the Patriots, like, were winning a few football games. And it was just enough winning football games where you're like, hey, I think this is going to be good. Like, this next year they made the playoffs. That's, if you're a Jacksonville fan, this might be what you're looking for. Are the wins coming? Yeah, a handful will come. I don't think they're going to go 0-17. I don't think they're going to win five games, but I don't think they're going to go 0-17. They got the Titans and the Dolphins and the Seahawks and the Bills coming up. Those are really, really tough. They might go 0-9 or whatever. But, you know, they've got Atlanta on their schedule. They got the Texans on their schedule. They got the Jets on their schedule. They'll win a few games. But if you see Trevor Lawrence throw three touchdowns and no picks, 375 and two touchdowns and no picks, you see a better third down conversion rate, then you'll start feeling like, okay, this is what I'm putting up with because I know eventually this kid will be a major star. Losing DJ Chark didn't help them last night, so nevertheless. But that's about the only takeaway that you can get from this game. Well, you know, Cincinnati... They go to what, 3-1 now? So
yeah, they're top of the AFC North.
Yeah, right. So 3-1 for Cincinnati, staying in the discussion with the more elite teams in the AFC.
Now, can they hold on, or are they still destined for third?
Right. Yeah. I mean, look at the teams they've beaten this season, right? I mean, all right, the Vikings was a pretty good win, and then two piece-of-cake teams in Pittsburgh and Jacksonville.
But, I mean, isn't that what you need, though?
You need to win those games. Absolutely. And that game was losable. I mean, if that's kind of a way to describe it. That game was losable to them last night.
And does it pain you when someone says, hey, you know, yeah, they're 3-1, but they'll probably still finish in third?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because you know who might be last.
We know what's going on in the Steel City right now. Yikes. But, yeah, I mean, again, this was a game. I'm not going to say they stole it because they came back. They scored 24 points in the second half. They didn't steal anything.
No.
But the reality of it is, a play here or there, and they're looking at a loss to Jacksonville. Right? And, you know, and Jacksonville's picking up their first win. All right.
I know, that's a bummer.
It was a bummer. I found myself pulling for Jacksonville last
night. So did I.
Not just because of the Steelers and the division and all that. That's all separate. Of course, I'm going to root for any. I root for every against any team in the division.
Naturally,
but that wasn't the reason. That wasn't the reason I was pulling for Jacksonville.
I was doing it because I was like, you know, Trevor actually is playing well.
Yeah.
He's not really making, the stereotypical rookie mistakes that he's been making the past couple of weeks. And, you know, he was really showing that, yes, he is an NFL quarterback. And he's going to have a good career in front of him.
Yeah, and I hope he progresses where... Look, I would like for him to progress to a point where when he has a game, and it will come, where he throws, like, two more picks in a game or whatever, we are still like, yeah, but he made, look at the throws he made. You know, so he threw two picks, big deal. He's still looking better. He's still confident. He threw two touchdowns that were brilliant. Those kind of conversations. Because the picks are still going to come, but if you still are seeing him develop as a quarterback and his confidence, because Joe Burrow, you know, is playing 1 year of football, right? I mean, like when he got cut short, and he's still kind of building a resume. He looked good in the second half last night too. I mean, that throw he had, that 31-yard pass that tied the game, that was a nice throw. It's a good throw, and he was confident in the game as to lead the team on scoring drives in the second half. That's what you want to start seeing from Trevor Lawrence with a few more games under his belt. So, other than that, again, I thought it was an entertaining football game. I thought I wasn't on the edge of my seat by any means, but towards the second half, I was like, all right, this is not bad. All right, coming up, we'll continue to look at the NFL. We'll get into the thing we talked about a little bit. with Belichick and Brady. The fact that there is still going to be a game, and how does that game play out? I mean, all the stuff around the game is going to be very interesting. But let's not forget about the, you know, quarterback versus defensive coach against quarterback battle that'll occur in Foxborough. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along on a Friday. Happy Friday to you. God, I'm so excited for this Georgia-Arkansas game that's coming up on Saturday. The more I've been reading about it, how good Arkansas's offensive line. If you got a good offensive line and you can run the ball and control some stuff, you might have a chance. The SEC weekend for me is fantastic. There's a couple of games that are not even on the big radar this weekend that are going to be important. First, O'Reilly Auto Parts specializes in keeping your car on the road. Not sure how much life is left in your battery. O'Reilly Auto Parts can help. Their professional parts people will test your battery for free. If it does need to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right one to fit your car. Superstar batteries are built to handle even the toughest conditions. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Like, you know, look, there's two big games in that conference that coming up this weekend. Alabama, Ole Miss, Arkansas against Georgia, battles of top 25 teams. But Florida goes on the road to face Kentucky. That Kentucky's been a little bit of a pest to some SEC teams. They've taken Florida down to the late in the fourth quarter, and they got a quarterback in Will Levis who can really throw the football. This could be, it's, you know, what they call a trap game or a game. You know, Dan Mullen's got to be careful of Kentucky. Kentucky's unbeaten right now. And while Florida should win that game, Kentucky shouldn't have the horses to stay in a game like that. They have surprised some teams in the past. And then Missouri and Tennessee, two teams that are 2-2, trying to find identities, trying to find their way. The Volunteers under Josh Heupel are always going to be looked at because he's not only trying to rebuild that program, but he's bringing a whole new up-tempo offense. There's a lot of good games in the SEC this weekend. And Auburn and LSU is a good rivalry. You've got TJ Finley, the quarterback at Auburn. He was from Louisiana and going back to Louisiana, could be the starting quarterback as he took over for Bo Nix last week in their game against Georgia State took him to the, you know, took him down to the wire. So a lot of interesting games within the conference. So, but also again, if you're a Pac-12 After Dark fan, what are they calling it, something different now? It's like Pac-12 After Midnight or something. Pac-12 After Dark, you got Arizona State and UCLA. That's a big game. If you're just hanging around Saturday night with nothing to do and the kids are sleeping, watch Herm Edwards take on Chip Kelly.
Yeah, you can't sleep yourself.
Or you can't sleep yourself because it's Saturday.
Just up. Watch it.
Just up late.
It'll probably be on my TV.
I liked Pac-12 After Dark. I haven't watched a lot of it last season. I got to be honest with you. I didn't pay much attention to the Pac-12 last year. I thought they got off to a late start and the season was kind of a mess. And so I didn't really, you know, I never felt a level of importance for it because it was, I mean, some teams played four games. It seemed like all the good games were getting postponed because of COVID. But 2019, that was one of my more favorite things to do is just watch it. I didn't always make it to the end. So I sat down,
yeah, rarely
kind of dozed
does anyone,
off a little
I think.
Bit. But I enjoyed my Saturday nights watching a late football. Since I'm not going out to the movies or anything, I might as well watch some Pac-12 football. Oh, speaking of which, Dave Preston's going to join us in hour three from WTOP. My good friend, James, he's a James Bond fanatic. He saw the James Bond movie, and I shouldn't say fanatic because that sounds like he's crazy. He's like an aficionado. He really knows James Bond movies. This is like his thing. So
how did he get
review.
To see it already?
He said he got a screening. He got an advanced screening.
Come on, man.
How do people do that?
Just get your name on a list, I guess. I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you get that?
See, I had a good family friend of ours. He was a Teamster in Hollywood.
Okay.
So when I lived in Southern California, he would get premiere tickets all the time and hated going.
Oh, okay.
So he would give them to me. And I was like, yeah, I'll go.
Yeah.
So I got to go to a lot of movie premieres with the stars.
When I was in, that must have been fun. Did you walk the red carpet and pretend you were somebody?
No, because unfortunately he wasn't on that level. Little known fact, there's always two premieres. There's the you know, red carpet premiere with the mega stars, you know, the big blockbuster movies. Those I never got to attend. But it was like smaller movies. I remember I went to the premiere of Ed Wood.
Oh, okay. That must have been cool.
Now, Johnny Depp didn't go to the premiere because Johnny Depp doesn't watch himself movies. But that's where I had a Tommy Lasorda incident.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Where he and I stood next to each other in a common area for men.
That's neat. I've gone to, you know, I when I worked in Las Vegas, one of the joys of working in Las Vegas was I worked at a cluster. So we had six stations in this building. And so people would win tickets to all these things, right? We had show tickets all over the place. So on Fridays, you had to pick them up. And some people would win and go, you know, I'm not going this weekend to go see whoever, right? You know, at the time it was either Lance Burton or Danny Gans or, you know, to see whoever. So we'd have, so on Friday, towards the time we were closing business, the receptionist would go on the intercom and she would be like, show tickets available at the front. And I'd go up and take my pick. What me and my wife were going to do that weekend, right? Most of it was going to the movies. Some of it weren't obviously the big concerts, but I got to see a Penn and Teller TV show. That was kind of fun. But most of the time it was mostly movies, like premieres of movies, like opening movie weekends. Yeah.
But when those are far and few between now.
When I always tell people this story. When I went to go see Penn and Teller at this TV show, they were taping a TV show at the Luxor. And we thought it would be cool, right? We was like, let's go see a TV show. So we go in the studio audience, and they kind of tell you, hey, you're not held hostage here, but we would appreciate it if you stayed for the whole thing, right? Because, you know.
And when you first hear that, you're like, what? Of course I'm staying.
Right. Of course I'm staying. But they're like, please stay. So then you watch it, and Penn and Teller come out, and they go, all right, and now the juggling stylings of Tommy Smith. And Tommy Smith comes out, and he juggles. And then you clap. Yeah, that's really great. And then Penn and Teller come back out again and go, now the juggling stylings of Tommy Smith. And he comes out, and he does this, and you're like, oh, I'm at one of these shows where they're going to do these things a lot
to get different angles
and different. That's why they told me that I can't just get up and leave.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to see these things three or four times a piece.
That's why in college I was in a fraternity, and that was a fundraiser for us, was to go to TV show tapings.
Like, oh, really?
Little known TV shows, not the ones that everyone wanted to go to, but it was the pilot shows and things like that.
Right.
And I always thought it was like, oh, that's a weird fundraiser. How awesome is this? We get paid to go see live TV, but yeah, you're there for like 4 or 5 hours.
You're there for a while, right?
You're like, oh, okay, yeah, you're doing the same scene again.
Right. So
thought you nailed it the first time.
We always have a laugh with that because it was great. It was fun, but you know, you don't leave feeling like you saw a show.
No,
you feel like you were watching like somebody build a building, right? That you don't get to walk in later. Like you just like, oh, they're here. Okay, that's where they're putting down the foundation. Okay, now, oh look, they're putting in the beam. Okay, that's cool.
And then,
windows are going in about an hour. That'll be fun.
And then they're doing like a set correction, so you're now you're watching paint dry.
Right, exactly. So then you have to watch the show when it's done to sort of feel like you've watched the program. Like you don't leave going, oh, that was a great show. You're like, I saw lots of pieces of something that I think they're putting together for a special. But it was still a unique experience. It was still rather fun. Dave Preston got an advanced screening to see James Bond. And I was like, we got to bring him on because people might go see it this weekend. It's Daniel Craig's last Bond.
Yeah.
And he knows, like, he's done things like, you know, breaking down all the Sean Connery ones and the Roger Moore ones. I remember when Roger Moore passed away and I was doing afternoons on the network, I had him on just to talk about Roger Moore's legacy. How do we define it in the Bond pantheon? Like what kind of Bond was he? How did he change in the 70s, you know, when they were trying to go with a different angle? And Daniel Craig, doesn't it feel like Bond was a little cartoonish in a way?
A little bit there.
With Pierce Brosnan. And then with Daniel Craig, it seemed like he got more gritty and a little bit more real.
It felt like he became more of an action hero.
Yeah, right.
Than just, you know, a ladies man.
All right, coming up next, on the football field, what can we expect Sunday night between Belichick's Patriots and Brady's Buccaneers? We'll talk about that next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're
listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. I was talking about this at the top of the hour. I think there's going to be so much pregame pump up, excitement, curiosity as to how the Patriots are going to welcome back Tom Brady when the Buccaneers play the Patriots in Foxborough. You know, what kind of video will be played? Obviously, we don't question the ovation. He's going to get a standing ovation that might last forever for everything that he's done for that team. That's a given. But then there is the fact that this game needs to be played. And when you think about it, yeah, are the Patriots a threatening football team? Well, not yet. You know, Mac Jones still working it out. Patriots are still kind of a vulnerable team in terms of where they sit. They're 1-2 on the season. But yet, you've got one of the most brilliant defensive minds in all of football in Bill Belichick, going up against one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. This should still be a really good battle to see which one of these skills comes through. Like Belichick, he's devised so many defensive schemes in his time as head coach of the Patriots, and Brady saw it all, right? Saw everything, saw all of it. And likewise, Belichick has seen Brady in every facet of his game. When he's struggled, when he's on, what he reads really well, what he sometimes struggles to read, the throws that he can make, the throws he struggles to make, whatever it may be, whatever the resume is, Belichick knows that inside and out too. This is such a rarity, because while we have coaches going up against former quarterbacks before, plenty of them in the books, and quarterbacks going up against former coaches, plenty of those in the books, rarely do we get one where there's 20 years of information to digest. I mean, Brady is going to have to go back into his memory banks to stuff Belichick may have done in years 1, 2, 3, got away from, brought back in terms of defensive schemes. He's going to have to really try to figure out, okay, if Belichick is going to do something new against me, what could it possibly look like? And likewise, the same thing with Belichick. All right, what does Brady do better in Tampa that he didn't do in the last few years of being with us in the Patriots? I think it's fascinating. I don't think this is a matchup of equal teams. Don't get me wrong. I think the Buccaneers are favored by 7 or 8 points. They should win by that, even more. But it is still, if you're looking at an X's and O's dynamic to this game or an angle to this game, I find it fascinating. Because we're talking about two people at the very, very top of their field. Think about the elements that you don't see in other quarterback going up against former coach sort of matchups, right? Like I said earlier, you don't get the 20 years, and you don't get the best versus the best, the greatest against the greatest. You don't normally get that, right? Quarterbacks sometimes play against teams where they're not even the best quarterback in their own division. But Brady's one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time. And Belichick is one of the smartest, most brilliant defensive minds in the history of the sport. And like, when you really think about it, when the Buffalo Bills went to Super Bowl 25 as this offensive juggernaut, and the team that beat them defensively was the Giants, and Belichick was the architect of it, you could have been amazed back in 1991 that was happening in the winter of 91 during that Super Bowl. But now, 30 years later, you're like, no, not that surprised. Look at what Belichick does with defenses. Look at one of the most defensively oriented Super Bowls of all time. The one that just happened a couple of years ago between the Patriots and the Rams. That was Belichick's brilliant shutting down Sean McVay's offense. So I think there's an angle to this football game that is really fascinating. Now, of course, I'm very interested in all the other stuff that goes on before it. And I've been interested in the conversation that these two have been having about it. But I think this could be a really, really fun game to watch, to see how each of them devises a scheme or plan to attack the other's strength. And we don't usually get that. So I'm kind of happy to see this. I'm very excited for this game. I think everybody else in the country is too. But I think for a lot of people, it's more about sort of this fireworky thing that we kind of thought this week would bring that it kind of didn't. But because both these teams have remained really civil, both of these guys didn't do anything other than praise the other person, which is fine. But they didn't do, you know, and they also didn't really make a point that it's just a regular game. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that they realized the magnitude of the moment.
Yeah, and I'm glad, too, because I don't think it would have been believable, right?
No.
We talked about this earlier this week. I don't think if Brady had said, you know, this is just another game, we would have called it out. And the media should have called it out. I don't know if people in Tampa would, because, you know, but people in Boston should have. Like on the conference calls that they have and stuff like that, those Zoom calls.
Well, and to Belichick's credit, I mean, I know he's been trying to deflect and just say, oh, we're preparing for the Buccaneers, we're preparing for the game. He keeps trying to do that, but he does throw little things in there as well going, yeah, you know, Brady's coming to town.
Yeah.
Yeah, realizing that, yeah, this is, you know, there is more hype around this one. There's going to be more media attention to this game.
Well, I hearken back to remember a long time ago when somebody asked Belichick about LT, meaning LaDainian Tomlinson, and Belichick corrected him and said Lawrence Taylor or something. It was either that or...
Like there's only one LT? Or...
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. No, that was something else. He was talking about Khalil Mack.
Okay.
And there was a couple of times where he talked glowingly about Lawrence Taylor. There was one about... LT, and he kind of joked there's only one LT, but that was different. I was thinking about that one. The one I'm really thinking about is when somebody kind of mentioned Khalil Mack and defensive players. How's he compared to Lawrence Taylor? And Belichick went, we're not comparing him to Lawrence Taylor. He's like, there's only one Lawrence Taylor. Like you could talk about other guys, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor. And it was the ultimate compliment that Belichick could give Lawrence Taylor, right? Like to tell that reporter, we're not going to compare Lawrence Taylor to any defensive player you name. You want to go somewhere else? We'll go somewhere else, but we are not going down that road. He'll eventually do that. You think he'll eventually do that with Belichick, right? Down the road, if he's still coaching like 10 years from now or 5 years from now, where somebody may say, hey, how does he compare to Brady? And he goes, we're not going to compare him to Brady.
Yeah.
You want to compare him against other quarterbacks that we've had here?
Do you think he feels like he can't be gushing over Brady right now?
I don't think he can do that now. I think when Brady's done, I don't know how long Belichick's got as a head coach. I mean, maybe he does it for 10 more years. Maybe he does it for 3. I have no idea. But let's just give him the benefit of the doubt, and let's say 10 years from now he's still doing this. I think there is a point where he does that with Brady. He says, look, man, you know, we're not gonna compare him to Brady. Like I'm not going to go down that road with you. We're talking about Tom Brady. I think it's coming. I don't think it can happen today. I don't think it can happen today because Brady is still writing a legacy that Belichick isn't writing anymore. Right? There, like, I don't know how much of an ego is in this, but I wonder how much he thinks that guy is writing a story that doesn't include me. Like, it's not winning a Super Bowl as a team. He's winning Super Bowls alone. Like, he's winning Super Bowls by himself. I'm not a part of it now. And I wonder how much of that is like, oh, my God, he is taking it to the next, continuing to write his legacy, and I'm dealing with decisions between Cam Newton and a rookie quarterback to try to make the playoffs again. You know, like, that must, you know, I would be a little irked by that if the media and the locality of where I was reminded me of that on a consistent basis. And they are. They are. They're, you know. It's hard not. That was the first thing most people thought of when Brady was winning that Super Bowl against Kansas City. Like I remember you and I talked about, okay, if Brady loses this, does he still win? Remember that conversation where we were saying, like, okay, he's having this sort of, this is playing out in the public between him and Belichick. He got to the Super Bowl. He beat Aaron Rodgers at Lambeau Field. But let's say Kansas City wins this comfortably. Does Brady still win? Just by being in the game, right? We were like, well, kind of, I guess, right? I mean, he got to the Super Bowl. But when he won the Super Bowl, it's like there was no debate. He won. He won the battle between the two factions, if you will, that were people were trying to divide in all those years in New England.
Yeah, seemingly answering the chicken or the egg conversation.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And that was sad because, as I mentioned earlier, you're talking about Belichick, who orchestrated some of the greatest defenses in football history with the Giants, right? Some of the greatest defenses. He had already established himself as a brilliant football coach as Bill Parcells' assistant. Like, he went to Super Bowls with the Giants. He went to a Super Bowl with them with the Patriots, right? Followed him to the Jets until he finally took the head coaching job. But he was already had a legacy. He was already building up an incredible reputation before he even got a hold of the Patriots and made this run with Brady. But lost in Brady's success because the narrow focus of it all was, well, where does this leave the coach? Like, where does this leave the coach behind him? And that's why I was bringing up the fact, don't overlook what he may be able to do defensively against this guy in this game. And then don't overlook the counter move, chess move that Brady makes going up against a guy he knows really well in devising defenses. It goes back to that thing Jason Cole talked about with Elway. That thing about Elway knows defenses because that's all he studied when he was with, you know, playing in the league. Brady knows Belichick's defenses. He saw them in practice. He saw the personnel. He saw how Belichick used every single individual that has ever donned a Patriot uniform in 20 years. If you're a certain size, Belichick will use you this way, and this way. If you've got this kind of talent, he will use you this way, and this way. If that edge rusher is fast, I expect to see this. If that linebacker is quick off the snap, I'll expect this. If this cover guy takes two steps this way, I know where it. I think this could be one of the greatest tactical football games that we've seen in a while between two brilliant minds. Now, at the same time I say this, it could be a Buccaneer blowout.
It could be.
Right? The Buccaneers, and Brady especially, who bounced back a lot after losing games, they could make this one a non-factor.
But it was funny. One thing we are almost dead certain on, it will not be a Patriot blowout.
That's very true. The Patriots either win this game close, or the Buccaneers win close or a blowout, right?
Yeah.
That's the only three options here. And they're not going to tie, so don't even throw that in the equation.
But I am curious. That's going to be a fun thing to keep a watch out for, is just Brady versus Belichick's defense.
Yeah.
And I don't know if whoever the winner of this game, if Brady wins this game, is, you know, what I hate is that it's like, okay, now it's certain it's Brady over Belichick.
Yeah.
And I don't like that narrative, because when you really look at the Patriots' run, first half was all Belichick. And then the second half, I'll give credit to Brady, except for the Rams.
I agree completely.
Against the Super Bowl, against the Rams.
Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit, because there is some other things that I do want to remind people of as to the 20-year success of the New England Patriots. We'll continue that as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life, Rocket can. I think what you brought up something that I think needs to be sort of driven home. We live in a very simplistic sports world, right? Black and white. There really is no gray area. We, you know, winners and losers. And that's sort of the way we do things, right? We, you know, Dale Earnhardt, the race car driver, famously said, you know, second place stinks, whatever it was, second place is the first loser, that kind of thing. We want something to be, you know, first or second. So when it comes to the Brady Belichick debate, it's almost like vanilla to say, well, they both contributed to the success, right? It's kind of not the way we're wired. We're sort of wired like, yeah, but who's more to blame? You know, who's more the credit? Right. And we go, no, it's both. No, I know. But come on. Like, if you had to choose, like, we do that all the time. Right. But the reality of it is, Brady did not have a say in how that team was put together. He didn't negotiate deals. He didn't sign guys for cheap. He didn't resurrect careers. He didn't change schemes with a double tight end, you know, of Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. Like, he didn't do those things that Belichick did to stay relevant for 20 years in the NFL. Yes, having the greatest quarterback of all time is great, but you know what? You don't always go to the Super Bowl just because you have the best quarterback, right? You need to build the team the right way. You need to put together the right finances to bring in the best players you can. And that was Belichick. and the way he brought guys in to take less money to be part of it, to find guys who were willing to resurrect their careers and do different roles, and getting them for as long as they would let. Like, Randy Moss eventually got his way out of New England, but while he was there, that few, he got enough out of Randy Moss, then he didn't need him anymore. He got just enough out of Chad Ochocinco that he didn't need him anymore, right? Like, that kind of thing where he would bring in a guy, and then they would do just enough, and they go, like, that's it. That's it. Like, just before you start acting up again, I'm getting you out of here.
Well, because I'll give him this, too. Like, on the offensive side of the ball, Belichick and Brady made players.
Sure.
Because they had a bunch of no-name receivers that, you know, on any other team, you wouldn't know. You probably wouldn't remember Wes Welker or any of those type of guys. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, he had stars, but he didn't have, like, you know, the J.J. Watt or, you know, even go further back, like a Lawrence Taylor. You know, he never had any of those caliber of players. He just had solid players who fulfilled a role in that position.
Yeah, and you think about that Patriots, that first Super Bowl, when they went to go play St. Louis. Well, how the only way they're in that Super Bowl is that defense steps up, yep, and stops the greatest show on turf. Right, yes, Brady did his thing, but remember, it was... that defense was so good, it was scary. So good, it was scary. And let me tell you, there was a double-digit favorite for the Rams going into that Super Bowl, and everyone was taking New England because of that defense. And they weren't taking it because of Brady in that first one. They were taking it because that defense, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, they were fantastic. And so Belichick definitely deserves his credit. All right, coming up next, the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll also talk to Josh Alper, some NFL, as we continue along with Wake Up Call.